The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And good evening to a chilly evening in Johannesburg. And tonight I'm privileged to have with me a friend and a colleague by the name of Jonathan Pollen, ex-South African living in Israel, very well-read and informed Israeli and opinionated about Israeli politics. And welcome, Jonathan.
Hi, Stan. Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. And you? How's Jerusalem today?
Well, I heard on the news when you gave the temperature for Jerusalem and it's sunny. It's actually, the sun is going down. It's been very hot over the last few days, but today it's still very warm, but it's better than it has been. I'm not that keen on when it gets too hot.
So the temperature might be cooling a little down, but politics heating up. And Netanyahu can't raise a government, so he's forced to go to another election. How does that augur for Israel?
Well, I think no matter where you stand on what your political position is, it's not good for Israel. It's not good that within 2 months or within 6 months, we're going to have we're going to have another election. And it's not that clear that the next election, the result will be any different. Although it will put Netanyahu in a very difficult position after the next election. This election, he made it earlier for personal reasons because he got charged and he wanted to, he's too big. When he negotiated his coalition, his two big demands were to pass a law that would give him immunity, that he could not be charged. And the second law that he wanted to pass was to deprive the Supreme Court of the right to overturn Knesset laws. Well, the Supreme Court would still have that right, but any majority in the Knesset could then override the Supreme Court. And he did that because if someone appealed to the Supreme Court against the immunity law, he wanted to be able to override, and the Supreme Court ruled the immunity law illegal, he wanted the right to then overrule the Supreme Court. And he'll now have difficulty doing that. Prior to being charged, he has the right to a hearing, which is taking place, if I remember correctly, in September, October, and then the election will happen, so he won't be able to pass any laws. So if the Attorney General actually decides to indict him, he will be charged. He won't be able to avoid being charged.
So today, apparently, the Attorney General did say that he's going to withdraw the possibility that they can delay the questioning of the indictment. Did I read it rightly?
Netanyahu previously requested to have the hearing that's entitled to before he gets actually charged for a year. And the Attorney General turned that down and gave him a 3-month delay. And okay, if you're saying he's maybe there was another appeal to have it delayed, maybe I was at work today, so I didn't really. That might be news that he had repeated what he had said before.
Okay, so we're talking to Jonathan Pollen. This is the Hebrew Order of David, the HOD Hour. The context, actually, from the Hebrew Order of David's point of view, is that we have lodges in Israel, we have members in Israel. We, as the lodges in the United Kingdom, United States, and South Africa, we support a number of organizations that, which are in turn supported by our lodges in Israel. And so it's important to us to understand the context of what's going on in Israel and understanding what the future is. I just want to make a comment about, before that, if anybody else wants to comment, you're welcome to send an SMS to 34519 or to a WhatsApp to 061-895-1019. I read recently that they're saying that Netanyahu is almost messianic, that his long sojourn as the prime minister, some believe, may mark the beginnings of an entirely new, far more messianic era. And they're saying the word Netanyahu has the same letters as Jonathan, which is your name. But besides that, they're kind of equating to him to a kind of a reincarnation of Jonathan. So, I mean, I have a number of heroes in that I look up to, that I've looked up to over the years, being Churchill, and another one being, of course, I think very highly of Netanyahu. I don't know that he's any all in that about his politics, but certainly as a leader, and I think the rest of the world looks up to him as a leader of Israel. So it would be really, I think, in a way sad that he isn't the leader. What is the future without him?
You mentioned that he's looked at messianically, and I think he has, people are prepared to overlook many of his mistakes or the things that are, even the corruption charges, a lot of people don't believe it, or the suggestion is, even if he did it, we need him as a leader. So his power to influence people in Israel, or maybe even in parts of the world, to especially in the Jewish community, that people are influenced by his rhetoric, the way he speaks, the way he articulates things. When he appears on TV, he's very confident. He's knowledgeable. He's a very smart man. He's well educated, but the idea that Israel is dependent on one leader, and that one leader's brought all Israel's successes, and if something happened to him, that Israel would not, it would damage Israel so severely, that is problematic. And I don't think it's true. I think he's got skills that maybe some of his rivals don't have those skills. They don't have his experience. But on the other hand, he's done, within Israel, he's been extremely divisive. He's not been a unifying leader. He's turned the opposition into enemies. He's made the idea of anyone who opposes his policies from the left or the center, he dismisses them as the leftist, as leftists, and that's become it's a curse word that no politician wants to be associated with. When Lieberman prevented him from forming his government, immediately afterwards, Netanyahu had a press conference where he called Lieberman a leftist. The idea that Lieberman is a leftist is absurd. Most of the journalists started laughing. But the fact that Lieberman will be painted, it could be painted like that, could harm him in certain right-wing circles who take what Netanyahu says as almost the word of God. And any leader, he's an ordinary human being. So the idea of that he's messianic or that it's even associated, I think is highly problematic.
But now if you go back to the 80s and 90s, when Netanyahu was the foreign minister, I mean, he was in America, and he visited, and he became very friendly with the Lubavitch Rebbe. And the Lubavitch Rebbe told him, there's 120 Knesset seats, and you're going to be fighting with 119 other people, but you're going to come out on top. Is that a prediction that is really going to happen this time? I mean, he's already much more because the other three parties which make up the blue and white, with Benny Gantz, they are actually, they still don't come up to Netanyahu's, numbers, but they fragmented. And there's another, 12 or 13 parties which managed to get seats, some of them as few as four. And yet you still couldn't form a coalition with them. I mean, where do you stand? I mean, clearly you're not a Likud fan, but...
I'm not a Likud fan, and the reality is, if you just look at the Jewish vote, the right wing got about 61% of the vote, and the left got about 39%. That's excluding the Arab voters. So even the 65-55, the 120 members of the Knesset, the right wing, including Lieberman, got 65, and the left got 55 seats. But that's including the ten seats from the Arab parties. But so if you take the Arab parties away, the right is overwhelmingly popular in Israel. It's, I had no expectation before the election that we'd get a left-wing government, or a more left-wing government. To call Gantz, Ashkenazi, and Bogi Yaalon left-wingers is a bit strange. They certainly wouldn't define themselves as left-wingers. They three of the leaders of the Blue and White, and Lapid also has done everything to avoid being called a leftist. And I'm not sure that if in a normal circumstances, if Netanyahu wasn't in the difficulties that he is now, he might have formed a coalition with the Blue and White and Likud. I think if you take the majority of the Israeli population, those that voted Likud and those that voted Blue and White, I don't think the differences are that great. Also, after Netanyahu was elected, I was pretty sure that he would form a coalition. The problem is with Netanyahu, he didn't only turn his opposition into enemies, he's turned many of people who support him into enemies. He's been a ruthless leader that's crushed any potential threats to his leadership. He's created a situation that we're even talking about messianic, where people see him as the only potential and only possible leader, which is highly problematic. If something happened to him, the idea that the country wouldn't continue or somehow fall apart or there'd be problems seems absurd to me. He started out with Lieberman when Netanyahu started out, Lieberman was his right-hand man. Lieberman helped Netanyahu to get elected. The Likud party elects, people who are going to be in the Knesset. They have a list. And if I remember correctly, Netanyahu finished first with the help of Lieberman. Lieberman went round all the country to the different branches, and he brought Netanyahu there. He knew all the people, all the different important people that you need to get to support your candidate. And over the last 20, 25 years, they've worked together, but they've also been enemies.
So he's really, some sort of kingmaker in a way.
Sorry?
He's some sort of kingmaker. And Lieberman, because it seems to be a lot in his hands as well, because he's now stopped this coalition, and clearly that's problematic.
Okay, so there was an article where a journalist wrote about that Lieberman knows he'll never be prime minister, but he does want to be the kingmaker. And he's gone in and out of coalitions with Netanyahu. He's joined them late. He hasn't joined the government immediately. Then he comes into the government. Then he pulls out. And I think at least according to a few journalists, Lieberman saw that Netanyahu was weak, and he saw it as an opportunity to bring him down. It's still interesting what will happen in the next election. I'm hearing a little bit from people that I know and I work in Jerusalem, where most of the people I work with, and I work in a quite a big company, tend to be right wing. There's a start of a little bit of doubt about Netanyahu, whether he can continue. I'm not sure. I really don't know. I don't know what he'll do. I don't know if he will get charged. Will he still stay in power? Will he get more votes? It's very unclear to me where we go. And no matter where you're standing, you know, left or right in Israel, to have that kind of uncertainty, I don't think it's healthy. Israel needs a strong government.
But if you look down the list of, first of all, many, many of the parties that were in the running over the last many years have joined with other parties, so there have been mergers. Down to something like 12 or 14 parties holding seats, some with two and three seats.
40 seats the minimum.
Four seats the minimum, but yet United Right and United and the Jewish Home parties with Rafi Peres, they have less than four.
No, they got six seats, but they're a coalition of parties.
Okay, so.
Actually, if you look at almost every single Israeli party, they're all coalitions. The two Arab parties are coalitions of party. Likud is made up of Chayrut and General Zionists and a party that Sharon had at some stage called Shlom Sio. The Labour Party was made up of a variety of parties. Meretz on the left is a combination of parties. In fact, the only party, if I think of Australia, that's currently in the Knesset, that Shas, I think that's the only party that doesn't have, and that's the Svadi Haredi Party. I think they, to the best of my memory, they're not a coalition. The the Ashkenazi Haredi Party is made up of two parties, Agudat Yisrael and Degel HaTorah. And as you mentioned, the party on the right is made up of two parties, and now they're talking about joining three or four parties together. They were actually made up of three parties.
In the rest of the world, people don't know the personalities. They don't know these parties. I think, in fact, if you had to talk to the average South African and certainly average American as well, English, we defend Israel despite everything, whatever the situation may be. I mean, there are many, many on the other side of the, you know, who really are against a lot of what Israel does in a sense, but if you listen to the radio or not, but we don't talk with understanding fully of what the situation actually is, what the alternatives are. So we're really influenced by what is given to us in the news. And so it's very limited. So and the reason that I wanted to talk to you, because you have an understanding and a full understanding, and I wanted to try to bring that perspective into the conversation, because I don't think that the average, well, certainly the people that I know, can understand anything beyond Likud. Of course, they've heard now Benny Gantz, but they don't really know that blue and white is made up of three parties, and that there's going to be leadership issues that will come to the fore there. Give us just the other parties. Are they dominant in the news? I mean, do you see about them, or is it just mainly mainstream stuff that comes through?
Part of the Netanyahu's problems with corruption, not part, in a large part of them, are to do with his obsession with the press. In the main, especially in the past, most of the press, were left wing, not because of any, just the nature of the people who became journalists. And it was also, you'd mainly see, Ashkenazi men. in the past. Today, it's actually changed quite dramatically. You'll see there's a lot more women coming through. It's from different ethnic groups. You'll see Haredi guys.
So women coming through, is that a good thing in politics? I mean.
I'm not talking so much of politics. I'm talking about in the media. The media was very dominated by white Ashkenazis, I put that in inverted commas, and that's starting to change. And Netanyahu had an obsession with the media being against him and being left wing.
Something like Trump.
So Sheldon Adelson invested in money, and he continues to invest money, in a newspaper called Israel Hayom, Israel Today. And it's a newspaper that's handed out freely, and it's handed out freely. It's become the biggest newspaper by distribution in Israel. More people read it than any other newspaper. And in one of the elections, soon after it came into being, Netanyahu said, without the Yisrael Hayom, he wouldn't have got elected. I'm not sure that's true or not. But what I'm trying to tell you, because your question was, do you hear about the other parties? Israel is obsessed with news and with politicians. You listen in the morning on the two main radio stations. All they're doing is talking about news and politics, and they're politicians coming on from across the spectrum. On television, there's three stations. The three stations have a lot of news programs, and they bring in politicians all the time from all the different parties. So most Israelis, well, they might not know the detailed policies of each of the parties, but they've certainly heard from them. They know who they are. They know the names of the politicians. And I'll tell you something sad about this election, the previous election. No issues were discussed. It was all personal. There was no discussion of what we should do with the Palestinians, no discussion of some of the social issues that have in Israel. It was at the lowest level that I've seen any other. In all the years I've been in Israel, it was the lowest level of discussion that I've ever seen. It was trivialized to a degree that it was difficult to listen to. It was made up of insults and discrediting of politicians. But as I said to you, Israelis know the names of the different parties because it's widely covered in the media.
Isn't this symptomatic of politics, starting with Trump? Theresa May bore the brunt of what was going on in England, in the United Kingdom, in Great Britain. I mean, it seems to be the way that politics is moving, that, you know, you're not scared to call out to insult the other parties, to say what you feel, tweet whatever it is. It somehow seems to be the way that things are. It's become less about the issue and more about the person.
That's the way it's been. It's been like that in Israel for a while. Very often when you watch debates on TV between Israeli politicians, very often there's no control there. People are shouting at each other, talking over one another. And it's also it's not only the politicians. There's Ahmed Tibi. Ahmed Tibi is an Arab politician who's made some, he doesn't hide his views. He would like to see Israel as a state for all its citizens. He probably would like to see a one state solution. And he's continually attacked for only dealing not with the Israeli Arab problems, but with the Palestinian issue. So the Israeli Arabs can call themselves Palestinian, but I mean Arabs who are citizens of Israel.
So he's actually an anti-Zionist in a sense.
Well, he's not a Zionist. He's very clearly none of the Arab politicians are Zionists.
And he's looking after Arab nationalism and the Israeli Arab interests.
But I suppose, in fact, somebody has to do that. That's the accusation against him, that he's not actually looking after the Arab Israeli, the Arab citizens of Israel's interests. He's more interested in the Palestinian issue. You know, how are we going to solve the Palestinian issue? So he appeared on the radio, television a number of times. He says 90% of his work is working with Jewish parties and dealing with either social issues or crime, just local issues. He says the press is not interested in that at all. And the funny thing about him is we're very often, when you see Israeli politicians from different parties or in opposite ends of the spectrum, that you think they're enemies. These people would have nothing to do with one another. Ahmed Tibi has a close relationship with a guy called Gafni. Gafni is an ultra-Orthodox Jew who's Haredi, who generally heads the finance committee. He's extremely powerful. And I saw them they go around the country speaking together. And both of them claim that they're part of a discriminated minorities. But if you go out in public, unless you actually see them together, there's an institute called the Van Leer Institute, and I saw them talking together. I never knew about it. There's another interesting friendship across the lines. Avigdor Lieberman is, as most people know, he came from the Soviet Union, came from Moldova. He's secular, and he's the reason he supposedly didn't allow the coalition, because he wanted a law passed that Haredi Jews, the ultra-Orthodox, will go to the army. And not all of them, but in certain numbers. That was his reason. But his constituency is made up of Russians who are the main not religious. They're anti-religious. They don't want religion to be imposed on him. And who's his close friend is, I've forgotten his name now, Aryeh Deri, who comes from the Shas party. And the Shas party is an ultra-Orthodox party who's trying to fight against the law. They don't want the people to leave yeshivas and to go to the army. And they have been friends for 30 years.
Strange bedfellows.
And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of politicians across different lines actually being friends on an individual basis. But when it comes to when they're in the public arena, they are brutally brutal against one another. I think most people would know Tzipi Livni, who Tzipi Livni is. Tzipi Livni headed Kadima. She originally came out of the Likud. And when Sharon left and formed the Kadima, she went with him, and then she eventually became the leader of Kadima. She was on TV, this is a few years ago, and she was talking with Tzipi Hotiveli, who was the deputy foreign minister, a Likud, and Tzipi Hotiveli was calling her a traitor. To use that kind of language is unbelievably dangerous. To be a democracy, you've got to accept that people have different views and that the opposition, that they are legitimate. When you start to delegitimize your opposition, it's very, very dangerous. And that, unfortunately, maybe people outside of Israel don't see. But Netanyahu has done that endlessly. And he's made people who live in Tel Aviv, who might be not secular, made them feel in a way that they're the enemies. And he's made people think that way. It doesn't necessarily translate on a day-to-day with the people, say, I work with a lot of people are right-wing. I work with a lot of settlers. I work with ultra-Orthodox people. It doesn't mean they're going to turn into a personal hate. But to some lunatics out there, people who are not so stable, they take this kind of stuff seriously.
So we hold that thought. We're going to come take a short break. We'll be coming back to you. We're talking to Jonathan Pollan in Jerusalem, and we'll be back in a moment.
This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And we're talking to Jonathan Pollan in Jerusalem. We're discussing Israeli politics, the context being from the Hebrew order of David's point of view is that we want to get a clear picture of Israel. We want to get a clear picture. And we'd also would like to educate ourselves in how do we answer questions and how do we discuss Israel in general when we're confronted with these type of situations. And it's a daily occurrence because we listen to it on the radio. There's a lot of anti-Semitism about, and that equates to anti-Zionism, which equates to anti-Israel. And so we want to be able to answer the questions. And so it's interesting to have this discussion. If you want to join the conversation, send an SMS to 34519 or 061-895-1019 for WhatsApp. That's SMS number 34519. I'm sure Jonathan will be happy to answer any questions. We're talking about basically really the coming new election, re-election process, which is going to take place in September. And it's fascinating to try to understand what Israeli politics is all about. So we were talking about Netanyahu, and there was Rabbi Kaduri, who passed away at the age of 106, also held Netanyahu in high regard, and he said that Netanyahu would rule for a very long time. And clearly that prophecy is coming to boot, and he is leading for a long time, but you don't know if that's going to continue, Jonathan.
It's interesting whether it will
certainly
continue.
Certainly till September he's going to continue.
Pardon?
Certainly he's going to continue till September.
Until the election, he'll definitely continue. I think it will be very much depend on how the election goes. There's an interesting thing when, I just want to make a comment about what you were mentioning about the defending Israel. I think for a lot of people in South Africa, if you don't defend everything about Israel and the Israeli government, people sort of think you're attacking Israel. But and I'm very cautious when I go outside of Israel. I'm not someone who's going to go into places where people have no knowledge about Israel and start telling that I don't like Netanyahu or that all my other various views about the problems of Israel. And I think it's will be one of the – for me, it's a nightmare that Netanyahu is going to be charged, if he's going to be charged, ever much I'd like him to leave as prime minister, to think that he'll be charged and that he'll be in court. And going to jail would be to have another Israeli prime minister, president go to. It's horrifying to me. The world will gloat about it. I can just think of the BBC.
CNN.
I'm not religious, but I'll say God forbid that Netanyahu ends up in jail. The day he goes to jail, the gloating, and it will be hugely damaging to Israel. Hugely damaging to Israel. If Netanyahu. Netanyahu has already been the longest, he's going to be soon be in another month or two, the longest serving prime minister Israel's ever had. Before he became prime minister, he was in favor of term limits. I think anyone being in power too long, I don't think it's healthy. I think there's even the idea that the state can only survive depending on Netanyahu. If you listen to Netanyahu and many other Israeli leaders, they'll say Israel's never been stronger militarily, economically, and diplomatically. And in part that is due to Netanyahu, but it's not only due to Netanyahu. I don't think when India or China or Putin are dealing with Israel, they're only dealing with Israel or giving Israel respect because of Netanyahu. It's quite clear if a new leader comes in, as Netanyahu, when he first came in, he was inexperienced. He made a lot of mistakes. There's no learning to be a, to be a prime minister, you've got to learn on, the job. So if someone replaced him, it would be better someone with experience. But I don't think, I can't buy into the messianic, idea that without Netanyahu, we will have problems. Just by the way, if we didn't have to have another election, if Netanyahu had, because this, in the normal circumstances, if some person can't form a government, and it's happened twice before, it happened to Shimon Peres and it happened to Tzipi Livi, they got the first right to go form a government. And in those circumstances, in the previous two times, when they weren't able to form a government, someone else, the president then went to someone else and came and formed a government. And with Tzipi Livni, it was Netanyahu, if I remember correctly, it was Netanyahu. And with Peres, it might have been Shamir. I can't remember. That was many, many years ago. So that was one option that someone else. And I've got a feeling if Netanyahu would have stepped aside, we probably would have got a government of the Likud and blue and white.
But who would have been the leader? Benny Gantz.
You know, I'm not sure. They many years ago, Peres and Yitzhak Shamir, Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Shamir had a rotation agreement. Where the parties were more or less even, and they had a rotation agreement where one was going to prime minister for the first year and the second for the next year. In Israeli politics, it's no one trusts anyone else, even when you're within the same party. So who would be the first prime minister? If it would have happened, I mean, it's speculation. I don't really know that it would happen. It's people have speculated widely that might have happened.
Does Donald Trump have an influence on Israeli politics? I mean, he's a big supporter of Netanyahu. So surely, you know, with Big Daddy America behind you, you can feel quite strong.
You know, it's not clear to me if that would influence the way people vote. Most Israelis are supporters of Trump. Many think he's been the best president that supported it. You know, that a lot of the things he's done, he's made a lot of people very, very happy. Is it going to make more people vote Netanyahu? I'm not sure. I think one of the reasons, when I go to the airport, there's a taxi driver who works for the company and I've known him over many years. And whenever he takes me, we debate politics. He comes from a Likud background, although his parents weren't Likud. He defends Netanyahu no matter what. And I came to South Africa just before Pesach, and he was in the car, and we're discussing politics again. And just before we arrive at the airport, he tells me, "You know me." He says to me, "You know me. I'm not ignorant. I know that when it comes to Israeli security, Netanyahu can't really be better than three ex-chiefs of staff, which is in the blue and white." He also says when it comes to the corruption issues, I don't know, you know, I know there's got to be something not quite right there. And the conversation ended. He fetched me again and I've seen him. I kept meaning to ask him, if that's still true, why do you keep voting for him? And I think it's a sense of security that people feel safe with it.
Better the devil you know than the devil you don't know.
Yeah, I think just as people in Israel or outside of Israel are influenced when he meets with Putin, that Trump supports him, that makes him more secure. I think the threats to democracy, the fact that he's turned Israel into a bipartisan issue in America, where the Democrats he's been so solidly on the Republican side. If there's ever a Democratic president, maybe we'll pay a price for it. He's caused American Jews in many ways to be upset with that, which I think is very, very bad. The power of American Jews and the support they give to Israel is unbelievable. Hafez Assad, who was the father, the current president of Syria, was once asked, what were Israel's strategic strengths? He also said, what were Israel's, also asked what the weaknesses, but he said Israel had two strategic strengths, technology and American support. And the sad truth, a lot of countries that deal with Israel, they think the Jews and Israel control America or influence America. And that makes Israel more powerful. And if we end up in a situation where the Democrats are not as supportive, and it's likely to ever be the next president will be less as supportive, we might pay a price for the kind of support we gave to Trump and the kind of support Trump gave to us. Hopefully, I'm not a prophet.
Do you think it could be some sort of a reaction?
It potentially, and the interesting thing, it's not just me who's saying that. It's, who's someone who doesn't support Netanyahu. I've heard it from friends who have supported Netanyahu, and you hear it from some of the Israeli commentators, that they make the same comment.
So having had this discussion and on the side of politics, I mean, when you travel to Israel, even if you've been there many times, or if you go there for the first time, you are blown away by the country. It's thriving. It seems to be first world. Why wouldn't you defend it with all your, whatever you can muster to counter every argument possible? Because there's the proof. The proof is that Israel is in the eyes of the beholder, a strong country with, we understand, and we cringe every time we hear about the border and about Gaza and about the rockets, etc. But at the same time, Israel is a thriving country.
There's a lot of good happening here. The country's in many ways over the time, the 34, 35 years that I've been here, it's changed dramatically. A lot of it for the good. Some of the internal things are less positive. But I have very little time for the Jews who are sitting outside Israel and are on the far left, criticizing Israel, holding it to different standards. At the same time, there's the extreme on the right who are more Zionist than Israelis who don't share their same view about Netanyahu. I think Jews need to defend Israel. They don't necessarily need to defend the details of everything that happens within Israel. But Israel's right to exist, it's not the army might not be in the kind of circumstance where it might not always behave according to the standards we set, that ideal standards. And in a lot of ways there's a lot wrong here, and there's racism, there's a lot of problems, but that's part of being with the circumstances we face and the challenges we face, it was never going to be perfect. Yeah. And it's amusing to me when I hear South Africans, whether Jewish or not Jewish, criticizing Israel for its treatment of the Palestinians or all kinds of other things. And I'm not too happy with the treatment of Palestinians. But the reality is, to be a poor black South African or to be a Palestinian in the West Bank, in Ramallah side, in the West Bank, the Palestinians in the West Bank live longer, they're better educated and less likely to die violently. So, I think people must just understand that if you live in Israel, it's a democracy, and if you're going to hear it from an Israeli criticism and it's within the Jewish environment there, it's not going to be, what might sound not pro-Israel is just part of a normal democracy in the discussion of the issues in Israel. Israel faces real challenges and the solutions for them are not clear.
So the real sort of situation from people outside of Israel is that we're largely uneducated. When I say uneducated, we're uneducated about the facts of Israel. We spout stuff which we read, and where do we read it? We read it in the populist press, and we don't understand the full depth of everything. And I was hoping to bring that to the fore in this discussion, because from the Hebrew Order of David's point of view, on an international basis, we feel that having a presence in Israel is critical to our existence. Yes, we want to have lodges in the rest of the world, and that's all very fine and well. But Israel is very important to us, and we support a lot of stuff going on in Israel, and we have a lot of connection to it. And from that point of view, we would like to, and I don't know if you have any suggestions of how we could kind of bring education to our organization, and of course, by the same token, to the rest of the public, because I really believe that we're talking without knowledge. And I listen to the radio and some of these programs and people who phone in, and they are not able to give a cogent answer. Whereas the enemies can give a proper argument. We can't answer that fully. We are not educated sufficiently.
Stan, it's difficult for me to answer that because, if you remember when we met, I spent some time in South Africa and we were on the committee that tried to, the press committee, I can't remember, of the Zionist Fed or the board, of Biyachad, trying to defend Israel. And my view was I wasn't going to defend the government in areas where I didn't believe in it, but it was to defend Israel. So, at the time there was, the Israeli ambassador to South Africa was a woman called Tova, I can't remember her surname, Tova. She was an ex-South African, and I remember hearing her talk. She says when she goes to Israel, when she's in South Africa, she doesn't talk to those who are completely anti and to those who are completely pro. And she was talking about in the fact that within the Jewish community, she got some criticism from people who saw as not be the ambassador to Israel, as not being pro-Israel. She said, you've got to talk to the people, the 80 or 90% in the middle.
Leave out the lunatic fringe.
Not necessarily lunatic. I mean, because I think a lot of Jews are so emotional, so tied to Israel that any criticism, anything, they somehow feel, it's hurting them in some way. I've had that experience of sitting at people in South Africa, and they start to talk politics, and I start to give a little bit more views, and someone telling me that if I don't like Israel, I should leave. I mean, that's absurdity. I've spent my whole adult life here. I've spent 35 years here. Despite all the problems that existed in South Africa, the person was the same age as me. They're living in South Africa happily with all its problems and don't come live to Israel, but somehow telling someone who lives in Israel that they should leave because they don't share views. So you can't, that's not the kind of person you can influence. And that's what people need to get educated. Where the criticism of Israel is dishonest, where it's really coming out of hate and ignorance, they got to find out the issue. where they got to find out about the details of the, when there's criticism about Israel and its use of military and how it's using military, or all some of the statistics in regarding to what's happening to Israel. There's an interesting thing here. Netanyahu used a lot of ugly rhetoric, and so did Lieberman, against the Israeli Arab population. But there's something dramatically happening within the Israeli Arab population. They're becoming more Israeli in a lot of ways. They themselves want to integrate more. And the interesting thing, a guy like Bennett, who was extremely against a two-state solution against the Palestinians, he with this government, this is the most right-wing government the Israelis ever had, that they're pushing for the Israeli Arabs to integrate into Israeli society. And Israel needs it. They're 20% of the population. You can't have 20% of the population not contributing economically. So there were certain standards, they said, within the government bureaucracy. They wanted to bring in more Arabs. There were very few Arabs. They wanted them in higher positions. They wanted to help them get into high tech. So when there are people who are calling Israel an apartheid state, you've got to know the details of that. Not that there's not discrimination. There absolutely is discrimination. You just have to go to the Israeli Arab towns and compare them to Jews. There is discrimination, but it's not that kind of discrimination. It's not unique to Israel. Go to France and see where the immigrants live and see how they try to get jobs within the French mainstream society. Not so easy either. But you have to know the other side of where the government is making efforts, despite its rhetoric, is making efforts to some extent to bring Israeli Arabs more into the mainstream.
So we've run out of time. It's been fascinating. I haven't even had time to punt the Hebrew Order of David. Jonathan, we're going to have a further discussion on this down the line. Thank you for your time. Unfortunately, right out of time. We always seem to, when we do get together, we always seem to have these long discussions. And I'm pleased that we were able to bring it to the public. And thank you for your time, and thank you for making the time. It's been fascinating.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
You. Thanks I want to wish everybody good Yontov coming up for the weekend, and good Shabbos for tomorrow night. And thank you from the Hebrew Order of David Hour. This is Stan Claff, and I've had the pleasure of having Jonathan Pollan, a longtime friend, Israeli citizen, a man who's understood and really understands Israeli politics. And thank you for your time.